your finances on a higher power. Being good stewards of the financial resources God has bestowed upon each of us is the key to financial success in life. It's your finances on a higher power. Here's your host, Paula T. Webb.
Hello, fellow traders. This is Paula T. Webb coming to you with the best of the best in the new age of trading psychology. We are hosted by 1610 WBGS. It's a great place to be on this May 11th, Mother's Day of 2025. First, let's say happy Mother's Day to all of you out there. I am a stepmother, so it's not quite the same, but it's still being a mom. And to those of you who necessarily don't have any two-legged children, I wish you a Mother's Day to all your furry, scaled, feathered children and anyone else you mother to. Okay, so first of all, we got a little bit of a problem here with my website, so thank you for calling attention to it, those of you who wrote in. I don't know what's going on with GoDaddy, but allegedly the glitches will be fixed by Monday. I hope they will be. So it's in terms of links not working and an inability to make a purchase. So we're working on that. So please bear with me. I'm not very happy about it myself, obviously. I've been yelling at GoDaddy for about 10 days. So please bear with me and be patient. All right, let's get down to business here this afternoon. And what I want to talk about, guys, is based on your calls and emails, it appears that quite a few of you don't really understand what it means to be in the investment industry. You don't really understand what it means to trade your own money and grow your own money and, you know, as a trader. Now, I'm going to backtrack a little bit because on the 1st of May in the New York Post, there was another article about junior investment bankers being allegedly forced to work 110-hour work weeks. Now, I don't know if that's exaggerated or not. It may or may not be, but I do know when you are a junior executive, whether it's at a bank or a brokerage firm, yeah, you got to put in the hours. And I'm not, and this has nothing to do with that old outdated and stupid phrase, you know, you got to pay your dues. This isn't paying your dues. This is learning the business. Now, I can guarantee you these young bankers signed an employment agreement because these young bankers, you know, they're making $200,000 and up. Now, you may not think that sounds like a lot of money, but that's a heck of a lot of money for someone right out of college. So in that employment contract, because I've seen quite a few of them in my lifetime, it clearly states you will stay, you know, they give you a base number of hours. But then there's always the caveat that if it is deemed necessary for you to work longer hours, you will be required to do so. Now, it's kind of a vague statement, but it's right there in countless employment contracts in our industry. I'm not talking about anywhere else. I'm just talking about in the investment industry. So a lot of these younger people getting into this industry in the institutional end of it or retail end of it, it doesn't even occur to them that, you know, they'd have to work even an 80-hour week. And I'm going to tell you guys right now, I don't know anybody that I ever knew way back when we all started out in our early 20s in this field. It would be an anomaly if none of us weren't putting in 60 to 80 hours a week. Okay, that was just a given. Like we didn't, you know, everybody else left at 5 o'clock, but those of us that were seriously wanting to learn how to trade, we stayed afterward. We reviewed trades. We you know, went over our charts because this was not an era where we had personal devices. We didn't have personal computers. We had to literally stay at the office and use the office computers to look at all the market data. after hours. So my point being is that, you know, to see these articles, and this is the second or third one in the last couple months, about, you know, these young people who want to be in the investment field, you know, crying about, oh my God, you know, we had to work 20-hour days. Well, no, you didn't. You could have made a decision. You could have said, the heck with you, I'm not doing that. And you could have found a different firm that maybe they were a little more normal. But I'm just here to tell you that 60 to 80 hours a week working on your craft is not unheard of, at least in the beginning, okay? I'm not talking about, you know, a couple years down the road. I'm talking about in the beginning. So the problem is that a lot of younger people today have never really worked. They haven't worked like someone, let's say someone who's 45 years and older, who, you know, we grew up working like probably since the time we were teenagers. I mean, I started babysitting at age 14. And at age 16, I got a job at the deli counter at the local store, the local, it wasn't a grocery store. It was just it was kind of like a mini Walmart before Walmart was around. And, you know, it had a deli counter. And so in addition to babysitting, I would be making sandwiches, pouring coffee, that kind of stuff. So I kept myself busy because I like money. I always have. So for a lot of these younger people who are starting out in this field, they have never worked 40 hours a week, 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week ever. And then to be, let's say, allegedly forced to work 20-hour days, first of all, that's illegal. No company can do that, okay? You just can't do that. And certainly not a bank. So, when it first started happening, these you know, young executives should have gotten together and gone to management and said, hey, you know, we're gonna take you to, you know, the Federal Employment Department, and you know, this is outrageous. But they didn't. They didn't because they didn't know any better, and they wanted to be in this industry. So my long-winded point here today is, just because you don't know what it takes to be in this industry, and you don't have a concept of working 40, 60, 80 hours a week, doesn't mean that you shouldn't be doing that on your own, not because your boss tells you to. I mean, literally, I was, when I ran the floor operations at the exchange, I was only paid for a 40-hour week, but I went in early and I stayed late because I wanted to learn. I wanted to know everything I could about the markets. So that was on my own time. I didn't get paid for that. And I sure as heck wasn't getting six figures. So, you know, if I had, I probably would have stayed longer. So there was many, many days I would get there at 5 a.m. and I wouldn't leave till 7 or 8 o'clock at night. I mean, also too, I mean, just like these young, investment CEOs, or not CEOs, junior executives, you know, we're all single, you know, so we have a lot of time on our hands to learn our industry. Now, with that said, to all of you out there that are traders, you have to ask yourself, how many hours are you putting in each week, dedicated hours, just to your trading? 20 hours if you're trading part-time, 30 hours, 50 hours, especially those of you that are still working at another job to pay your bills. How much time have you dedicated to working on your trading and while trading to learn your craft as a trader every week? You have to determine that, because there comes a point where when you're allotting too much time, then that starts interfering with the job that you currently have, or it starts interfering with your relationship or your family or your kids. You know, so you have to have a well-balanced timeline and schematic in your life to become successful. Now, in this article, it's talking about how a number of these young kids, and I call them young kids because they're in their 20s, you know, ended up with, you know, health issues, you know, crises. You know, one of them, you know, a couple of them had to go to the ER. Well, that's because they had absolutely no clue as to what they were doing. they didn't understand what it meant to be in this industry. What it means to be in this industry doesn't mean you're going to work 20 hours a day at your trading, or being an institutional trader or a retail broker. That's not what it means. And if anybody else tells you that, they're crazy and they don't know what they're doing and they don't know what they're talking about. I know a lot of traders that they can spend 2 hours a day, dedicating themselves to analyzing their charts, getting their setups, getting their stops ready, and then boom, the opening bell rings, they put on their trades, they put in their stops, and they walk away because they go to their job, their day job. I can't tell you how many traders I've worked with that did that and eventually became full-time traders. And you want to know how they did it? By not abusing themselves and overworking, overtaxing their brains. So I feel bad for these you know, junior bankers or retail brokers, because they don't even know anything about this industry. It's really a shame. They think they do because they have, you know, some probably have an MBA, and they think, oh, hey, you know, I know all about this. No, they don't have a clue. And that's how the banks, how these banks and brokerage firms end up taking advantage of them, because they know these guys don't have a clue as to what it takes to be a winner. They don't know how to think. Now, if my boss had ever said to me, oh, by the way, you've got to put in 80 hours a week, but I'm still going to pay you the same, I would have said, have a nice day. I'm packing up, and I'd pack up my desk, and I would have been right out of there immediately, because I would have known, I would have believed that there is another job waiting for me out there. But the young staff at these banks and these brokerage firms, they don't believe that, because they don't believe in themselves. So I'm just reminding you guys, you don't have to put in an inexhaustible amount of time to become a winning trader. That completely defeats the whole point of being independently making your wealth. Okay? So, you know, again, I feel sorry for these young people at these banks and brokerage firms, but you know what? They got into it knowing full well that this was what was going to be required of them, because they don't know what it means to really be an investor or a broker. But I guess they're going to learn eventually. All right, so we got that taken care of. I hope you guys understand this. If not, let me know, and we'll be right back. All right, folks, we're back. Now, again, if you guys have any questions about what I talked about earlier, I'm not, let me be clear here. I am not slamming these young professionals for wanting to get into this industry. I'm not slamming them because they don't know what they don't know. All right, because nobody knows anything about this industry until you're in it. Okay. You know I've mentioned previously, I did not even know what a commodity was until I started working at a commodity exchange and worked my way up to run the floor operations. I knew what stocks were, you know, because I paper traded with my father when I was a kid. But other than that, I had no clue. So, I mean, because I didn't take finance courses in college. I had a liberal arts undergrad degree, okay? So that's why I was so thirsty when I started working at the exchange, and I just chose to work long hours because I loved it. I just loved the industry. So I'm not putting them down. I just think they just weren't very smart, and they were just so eager to have a job and make that kind of money. The lure of that six figures really blinded them to probably properly reading their employment contract. So, okay, so moving on, another challenge that I see in a lot of my coaching, which kind of surprises me, but it's amazing to me how many traders really don't know basic trading terminology. There's lots of times when I'll be coaching someone and I'll be using, you know, just regular everyday trading terms, and they're staring at me with this glassy look. And I'm like, well, you do know what the bid is, right? You know, you do know what your commissions are, right? And they just like, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. So I'm going to take a few moments here. And for those of you, even if you think you know trading terminology, you might just want to still tune in because you may not. So we're just going to go through about 10 or 12 of the most important terms, I think, and that might help you guys out. So some are simple. You know, a bear market. And that market, a bear market, is governed primarily by traders who believe prices will fall, and therefore they become sellers. And it's called a bear market because what do bears do in the winter? They hibernate. Now, you got to remember, a lot of these terms were brought about because the markets were formed by farmers coming together at the corner of LaSalle Street and Monroe Street in downtown Chicago with their crops and their livestock. So a lot of these you know, terms, that's where this came from. So they made analogies based on animals and farming. Okay, so the word bid. A bid is the dollar amount placed on any contract that traders think will go up in price. A bull market. The bull market is governed primarily by traders who believe prices will go up and therefore they become buyers. Now, obviously, this is the opposite of a bear market because bulls, what do? They charge, they run. They move forward very quickly. Now, that's not to be confused with a fast market. Fast market is something entirely different. Now, a buy in the stock market, that means you are purchasing an actual stock at a particular price. A buy in the futures market, you are paying for a commodity that you believe will go up in price at a future date, but you do not actually own the commodity unless the contract expires and you take delivery of that. Now, it could be cattle, could be grains, could be gold, silver, any one of the commodities, frozen orange juice, sugar, coffee. Okay. What's the next one we're doing here? Capitulation. Now, capitulation refers to the point when investors give up on the idea of recouping their losses and they will sell. Most of the time out of fear, because they really don't have any tolerance for falling prices. And this means that they have low confidence and they have high uncertainty and they just sell off. And this is what Warren Buffett is so good at doing, is creating an energy of capitulation when he just says a blanket statement, like he did a couple months ago, oh, we're headed for a recession. And as I've said previously, he knows human nature, and he knows that he'll get rid of the guys on the fence or the newbies, and they'll sell, which will lead to a pretty large, usually a large sell-off, and then he buys it back real cheap. That's how he became a billionaire, guys. Now, charts, that is a static representation of how a stock or commodity is doing in terms of performance. And you can find a chart in a multitude different ways in formats and timeframes. And you'll find out all that by your platform provider, what kind of charting they may have. Now, commissions, that is the fee that you have to pay to your platform or your brokerage firm or even a broker for your trades. You know, there's a fee. So you have to take that into consideration with your budget. You know, how are my trades worth it? Is putting on 10 trades a day worth it? A commodity is associated with tangible goods. as I said a few minutes ago, such as precious metals, livestock, grains, food products, other food products. A contract is a defined amount per stock, and a contract is a defined amount of goods per commodity. Now, equity. There's a lot of people who don't really understand what that means. Equity means your money, okay? Equity equals money. You have equity in your home, right? So you could go and get a home equity loan if you needed to buy a new air conditioner or you wanted some cash to remodel. So equity is a term used to describe the dollar amount in your trading account that you use for trading. An exchange. The exchange is a trading floor or organization that facilitates any type of trading, whether stock, index, or commodity. Fundamental analysis. That is the prediction of price movements in the markets based on supply and demand. Indicators. Information used to help determine which direction the market may be headed. Not will be, may be headed. Margin. It's a little different these days, but, you know, you don't necessarily actually get a margin call. A margin call is when you exceed the amount of money in your account. And then your platform or your brokerage firm is going to send you an email or text or however you contact each other. And they're going to say, hey, you can't put any more trades on because you don't have enough margin to cover those trades. All right. So this is your deposit account required to trade. An amount of money held by that brokerage firm, that platform provider, which is equal to or above the amount of money in your trading account. Because you could get into a fast market, take a big hit. And trust me, they're not going to eat it. And if you don't have enough margin and you deplete that and you go, you know, in a drawdown, you're going to have like 24 hours to make that up, to make them whole. And offer. The offer is a dollar amount placed on any contract traders think will go down in price. Open interest. This is a big question for a lot of you guys out there. Open interest is the amount of activity in any trade, whether it's stocks, index, or commodities. It's open interest, meaning that's the amount of activity that's going on at any given moment during the markets. So, you know, these are some of them. We'll get into some more in the next segment. But, and, you know, and if you want a, you know, written copy of this, just send me an email and I'll be happy to send it over to you. I mean, there's a lot more. I'm just kind of going over the most important ones for you guys today based on your questions to me in the last couple weeks. So if you have other questions about other terminology, just, you know, send me an email and let me know and I will do my best to answer it. So think about these as we head into the next part of the segment. And again, if you have any questions, just send it to inquiry@politweb.com.
Paula T. Webb will be back with us in a moment. It's your finances on A Higher Power.
Okay, continuing with our terminology, one of the things that we hear a lot of lately, especially with the new tariffs coming into play, tariffs which, by the way, most of the country seem to be eager to do because they can see that it's going to be mutually financially beneficial. But one of the terms that came out recently, which some of you didn't understand, was buy the dip. Now, buying the dip refers to purchasing a stock or buying into the market right after it has lost value. and buying it at a discount. And this is, again, what I just said before the break. This is what Warren Buffett is really adept at doing and has been for quite some time. Now, the phrase is commonly used by retail investors or, you know, institutional traders. But, you know, as Mark Douglas and I have been teaching forever, you know, it's almost impossible to time the market to know where the bottom will be or how long a recovery will take. As I've said previously, all these commentators on television, and I'm not going to name any names, but you know who they are because you listen to them, and even any you know, these people you listen to on the internet, all they have is an educated guess. They don't know where the market is going to, how low it's going to go. They don't know how long it's going to take to rebound. Yes, they can say, oh, well, historically speaking, and they could come, well, the last, you know, 5 years of this, the last 10 years of this, we can see a pattern. Yes, patterns. That is not trading in the moment. Now, you can use those patterns, that historical data of any market that you're in, to give you a foundation of understanding how the market was, how it traveled, and how it got to where it is today. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to repeat any of those patterns at any given moment. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, that's ridiculous because you can see patterns in all these markets. Yes, you can, but you can't see it in the moment. You don't know if it's at its lowest low. You will, using your education based on your analysis of old charts, past charts, you could say, well, it's a probable bottom, or it's a probable upswing. But there's no sure thing here, guys. You know, that's crazy. And so anybody that says, yeah, it's a sure thing, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It may be a sure thing in that moment, but it doesn't mean if you miss that moment, the next moment, it may not be a sure thing. Okay, so really excellent traders like my good friend and peer, Larry Pesavento, yes, he is an absolutely astoundingly good trader. And he can say, yes, this looks good in that moment. Or someone like Alexander Elder, another good friend, he can say, hey, this looks good right now. And they know that. And that's why they say, right now. It looks good now. They're not talking about 5 minutes from now or 10 minutes from now while you go back and look at a 3 minute chart or a 5 minute chart or a 30 minute chart and delay getting in or getting out. So, you know, you want to buy the dip based on somebody else's analysis. You got to keep in mind, it is impossible to know where the bottom will be in any market at any given moment or how long a rebound is going to take. You just don't know that. You can have a good idea, as I just said. You can have a good guess, but it's still probabilistic. So keep that in mind. And those of you that have read our second book, Trading in the Zone, that's all that book is about, is learning how to think in probabilities. Now, this leads us into the next definition, patterns. Patterns are noticeable indicators represented on charts, and whatever kind of chart you're looking at, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what the methodology is. A chart is a chart is a chart. So these are noticeable indicators represented on charts showing the directional motion of the markets, meaning it's in motion. The markets are always in motion. Okay, what is a pip? A pip just is one incremental amount per contract size. Scalping. Scalping is the type of trader who gets in and gets out of trades quickly and frequently. More commonly called today as day traders. But day traders don't necessarily have to be scalpers either. Day traders could, you know, be in a trade all day. Scalpers are going to be in and out, in and out, in and out all day long. Now, a sell in the stock market means you are selling your percentage of stock in the company you bought stocks in previously. And a sell in the futures market means you are selling your intent on of a future delivery of a commodity at a particular price, meaning you no longer are going to take delivery of that commodity. Stops. Yes, let's get into the definition of stops, please. A stop is a designated price the trader will use to place a buy or sell order in the market to limit any loss that may start to occur. Please, guys, use stops, not mental stops, a physical stop. You really need to understand this. It's for your benefit financially. Technical analysis. These are indicators used to analyze market data. It is the study of charts to find repetitive patterns and trends to generate buy or sell signals. A tick, just like a pip, it's one incremental amount per contract size. Time and sales. I can't tell you how few of you guys know what time and sales is. Time and sales represents the actual trades that have occurred at what price and what time. It's the title itself says it all. And this is what the exchanges do electronically now, when we used to literally have to handwrite it on the floor. But this is all done electronically now. Every time you put a trade on or you put a bid or an offer in, it's recorded and it goes out into the markets. Every single bid and offer is recorded. So no one's ignoring your trades. It just doesn't work that way, especially electronically now. Volume. Volume is the amount of trading happening for each stock, index, or commodity, or anything that is traded every single trading day. That means the volume, you know, all you got to do is watch the ticker tape on TV. You're going to see how much trading is happening in any market. Okay? And let's talk about the name Wall Street. What's Wall Street mean? Anybody know? Well, it was the name of the street it was on. And that's where the stock and futures markets began, way back in 1792. 1792, guys. Now, it didn't start happening in Chicago until the late 1800s. And that became PUDs markets back then. And that was, I want to say 1889, but that's in my next book, all those details. So hopefully this has kind of given you a little more of a foundation for understanding some terminology. And again, if you come across some other terminology that you're not familiar with, you know, just give me a shout out and, you know, I will give you the definition and walk you through it. Okay. All right, so the next thing we're going to do is, which I know you guys have been asking, and I, you know, have been a little lax on this. We're gonna go over some affirmations, and I want you to get out a piece of paper. All right, we're gonna start with a few of these that are more of a question before we actually go ahead into the formal affirmations in the last part of the show. So get out a piece of paper. And you don't have to write the question down, just write yes or no as I'm talking. So, number one, I am now open to new possibilities on how to become a winning trader. Agree or disagree? Just write down your answer to that. And don't think about it, guys. Just write your answer immediately. I believe in my abilities and skills to be a winning trader. Agree or disagree? I now take an active role in planning and managing my trades? Agree or disagree? My mind is relaxed, creative, and receptive to prosperity each morning before I start trading. Agree or disagree? I have gratitude for what I have accomplished so far in my trading. Agree or disagree? I now train my mind to seek a higher sense of trading prosperity. Agree or disagree? Today, I will let go of one less than perfect thought about my trading. Agree or disagree? I accept my confidence as a trader and know that my perfection will only improve from this day forward. Agree or disagree? I am the only one to bring about my trading wealth with God as my guide. Agree or disagree? Now, if you disagreed with any of those so far, then write down why. Take a few moments and just write down why. You already know why. I already know why, probably. But you need to acknowledge why you don't agree with those affirmations. And when you start understanding and you know, kind of breaking down the resistance to an affirmation, then you can truly step into your warrior mindset. Okay, so as we continue on with some affirming statements, a lot of you folks ask me, like, well, how can you be so sure of yourself? How can you be so sure that you're going to make money as a trader? And I always counter that question with, how can you not be sure? How can they not be sure? If anybody enters into the game of trading and doesn't believe that they can make money as a trader, then they're doomed to fail. You can't convince yourself of something if you don't believe it. It's not the way our minds work. It just doesn't work that way. I know I've mentioned previously that I really wanted to play guitar. And, you know, Mark bought me a beautiful Spanish guitar. And, you know, I got some books and listened to some CDs. And the problem was I had taken 15 years of classical piano growing up. So I was used to a piano keyboard. I could not wrap my brain around my fingers being on an E or a D. And it just, because the piano keyboard was so ingrained in my psyche. I just couldn't do it. Now, the bottom line is I couldn't do it because I didn't want to spend the time that I knew it was going to take. So I went at it kind of haphazard. And after a couple of years, I just said, you know, I had to accept the fact that I was not all in. Now, this wasn't anything critical. It was just learning to play the guitar, right? But it's the same with your trading. You may think you're all in because you really, really want to do it. But if you're not willing to do what needs to be done, the mental work, then you'll never achieve financial independence as a trader. So what you have to do now is you have to start to mentally accept the vision of financial independence for yourself as a trader. As a trader. And you have to do that by filling your mind with pictures of the life you would love to lead, rather than staying hypnotized by the life you're leading right now. Now, what do I mean by that? A lot of you traders contact me and I say, well, what is it you're going to do with your profit? Are you going to reinvest it? Are you going to, you know, take a great vacation? Are you going to save up for your your children's college fund, and very few of you can even answer that. If you don't know what you're going to do with your trading profits out above and beyond your living expenses, then how is it you think you're going to grow your trading account? Because again, as I've said previously, your brain isn't going to understand why you're even trading. It's like, well, you have enough money to live on. You met your monthly nut. You know, why are we going for any more? So a good technique for this, and I'm taking this straight away from Catherine Ponder's book, The Dynamic Laws of Prosperity. As I said previously, I've known her for years, and she has given me permission to share her materials with you, and some of her materials in my books. But a real good example of this, and this is how I started becoming wealthy, folks. So let's just say you look at your trading account, and let's just say you have $5,000 in there for the purposes of this example, right? And you know you want to make more. So you look at your trading account and you declare out loud, I give thanks that this $5,000 is just a symbol of the inexhaustible substance of the universe. And I give thanks that 10 times this much, 10 times the $5,000 in my account is now on its way to me and quickly manifests in perfect ways. Multiply that figure in your trading account by 10 and begin expecting that multiplied amount to come to you. So now what you're doing is you are beginning to think of how much you already have and how much is coming, rather than the usual, you know, let's say less than positive thought that you don't have enough and you haven't made enough. When you multiply everything by 10, your thinking automatically shifts from lack to prosperity, because our minds almost immediately respond to definite dollar amounts. And soon, very soon, it will seem as though heaven and earth are working to propel money in your direction. Now, I'm sharing this with you guys because how do you think I got back on my feet and am doing better than ever after losing everything after Mark died? This book, these affirmations, okay? Now, some of you say, well, I don't have enough, you know, to pay my bills. Change that thought to, the money in my checking account is just a symbol of the rich substance of the universe that is available to me. I give thanks that 10 times the amount in my checking account is now on its way to me and quickly manifests to meet every bill I have. Just remember, the money you have right now in your trading account or your checking account or whatever, wherever you look at your money, is just a symbol of the infinite abundance of the universe that's now available to you. And then you give thanks that 10 times that amount, whatever is in your accounts, is on its way to you, and it will quickly appear so that every financial obligation is immediately and completely met with the rich abundance of the universe. Pretty easy, guys. You have to learn how to change your attitude to believing that this is a rich universe that you are a part of. And there's plenty of money for you and for me. You have to start believing this, guys, because you are a radiant child of God. And God wants to give you universal abundance. I know this because I have experienced it. So one of the best affirmations that I say every day, morning, noon, and night, every day in every way, I am becoming financially independent as a trader, as a writer, as a consultant, with the help of God. Now you put in your own words, but I just put all of that in for me. So every day, in every way, I am becoming financially independent as a trader with the help of God. So this is Paula T. signing off for another week. I hope you have a wonderful week of trading and make tons of money. And I wish you all the best. You can reach me at www.paulatweb.com, 760-636-4290. And we do have a cell number now, 442-256-0548. Talk to you next week.
Paula T. Webb, co-author of The Disciplined Trader, The Complete Trader, and several other all-time best-selling, award-winning books, including Trading in the Zone, books that set the bar on trading psychology. You can find her classic books on Amazon and on her website, www.paulatweb.com.